My name is Robin. I'm the lead pastor, and welcome to East Lake. Welcome if you're watching online. We designed East Lake so there'd be a church for everyone, because everyone has things in their life that they want or they need, but it's going to take a miracle for it to happen. And this is the last week of our series. It'll take a miracle. And what is it that you'd like to see happen in your life, but you know it's going to take a miracle? And maybe it's something that you used to really, really thought you wanted or you needed, but you let go of it because you just didn't think it would ever happen, because you wonder, well, should I even believe in miracles? And you know, miracles just don't happen. Someone makes miracles happen. There is a miracle worker who works miracles, and his name is Jesus. And you can always ask Jesus for a miracle, because miracles depend on God's mercy, not our goodness. So no matter what's happened, what circumstances you're in, if it's your fault or not, you can always ask for a miracle, because it never depends on how worthy you are to receive the miracle. Miracles have nothing to do with how deserving I am. It all depends on God's mercy. So here's the question, what we're going to look at this weekend as we finish the series: what makes the miracle worker do miracles? What motivates Jesus? What matters to him? When I was young and I was a dumb husband, I got married, and my wife, all right off the bat, I realized she likes to spend money to get her fingernails done and, you know, her toenails done. She likes manicures and pedicures. And so I, as a single guy, I never really even thought anything about that. I mean, I don't know if you know this, women. I'm just like, this might be shocking, but like, guys don't really care what your nails look like, especially your toes. I mean, they don't even care about that kind of stuff. And so I went into the marriage, and I'm like a dumb husband. It's like, she wants to spend what I thought was a lot of money, because anything more than like 25 cents to let a stranger touch my feet would be a lot of money. So anyway, she's like, I want to get my nails done. And I couldn't understand it, and because it doesn't matter to me, and I work with a bunch of guys every single day. So I'll put it in context. Ladies, here's some context for you. Every single day, I work with like some guys. Every single day, I mean, these are like locker room guys, and I have never been in a conversation with them where somebody walks up and says, "Woo, you should have seen the nails on that girl." I mean, woo, I want to see that color again. It just never happens. So I go into my marriage, and it doesn't matter to me at all, but then I became a smarter husband. Because I was like, well, I get it. I mean, the nails don't matter to me, but because I don't care about them, but they matter to her. And so now, they matter to me. And that's the big idea this weekend. If you're wondering, well, what makes a miracle worker do miracles? What matters to you matters to him. It's the big idea this weekend. Write it in your notes. If it matters to you, it matters to Jesus. If you're wondering, what would make him work a miracle? If it's not my goodness, then what is it that makes him work a miracle? And whatever matters to you matters to Jesus. And so let me read something. We're going to take a look at a story today. And in this story, Jesus is going to show to us, and he's going to show to a group of people why it is that things matter to him and how he does miracles. Because this is a group of people that don't even ask him for a miracle. I mean, this is a miracle happens that nobody even speaks to Jesus about. And so let's read it. Soon afterwards, Jesus went into a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. So Jesus is going into this town, Nain, and this is just a regular town, by the way, regular place. People got regular jobs. They go to work every day. Their kids go to school every day. They have barbecues on the weekend. They're saving up for the RV. I mean, it's just like a regular place that Jesus is going to, and he's not planning on doing any miracles. This is just a pit stop for Jesus. He's just passing through. There's nothing scheduled at all that's going on here. And he approaches this town, there's a funeral, and so it's like a perfect storm for nothing to happen. Here comes the funeral, and Jesus hits it. And usually when Jesus would go into a town, a crowd of people would be waiting for him. They'd be waiting for him because they'd be wondering, what, maybe he's going to do miracles, and we want to check Jesus out. But there's no crowd at all waiting for Jesus this time, which is odd and unusual, because they can't stop what they're doing. And I remember when my life was like that. You know, Jesus was kind of out on the margins of my life, and I thought about him, and I wondered about him, and someday I'm going to get to Jesus, but I can't stop what I'm doing now. And certainly what I'm doing now isn't going to mix very well with him, and so I'm going to have to get to Jesus later. And you might know someone like that. And that's what's happening here. They can't stop what they're doing now, and so it's like the perfect storm. Nothing's going to happen because they can't stop. They can't stop what they're doing, and Jesus is just passing through. And it turns, I mean, think about these people. They're at this funeral, and it seems like, to me, that they really care about this widow and this family. She must be pretty popular because this good-sized crowd turns out for this funeral. And funerals are always hard, difficult, because you can never do what the person needs at a funeral. When you're at a funeral, you can support somebody, but you can never do what they really need, because what they need is the dead person to come back alive, and you can't do that. You can't make a miracle happen. So, you know, funerals are always very, they're difficult times for all of us, because you know what the person needs, and you can't do anything about it. They need something you can't do, and that's what's happening here. And they know that this widow is facing a completely different life. They know her plight. In this culture, she'll have to go live with her parents now. So think about it. She has her own home with her own appliances and her own money, and she's like in charge of her home, and everybody comes to her for answers. And that's all over now. Now she's like moving back home. Or maybe she'll have to live with some distant relatives, or maybe even worse, she'll have to live with the church. But whatever it is, her life is changing, and her life is changing for the worse, and it's not her fault. And isn't it difficult when you go backwards in life? You know, you get a demotion at work. Everybody sees now that this is your new job and you've gone backwards. Or, you know, you used to be in really, really good shape, and then you get hurt or injured and you're not in good shape anymore, or you get sick and now you're dealing with stuff. You feel like you went backwards. I look in the mirror, I see gray hair. I'm like, ooh, I'm going backwards. You know, you go through a bad breakup in a relationship. It's like, I used to have a home and kids and everything, and now I'm in an apartment. I feel like I've gone backwards in life. Are you at a place in any area where you feel like, man, how did I end up going backwards? The grades come in and they're not as good as last time, and that's this widow. We all have spots like that. What's really odd is when you've gone forward in some area, and it's the area that you should feel really great about, but there's this area over here that just seems to dominate everything, and in that area you feel like you've gone backwards, and so you just feel still like a loser. I thought when I made a lot of money and got a promotion, but you still feel like you've gone backwards. And that's the widow. And Jesus, he runs right into this funeral. No plans now. Nobody asks him for a miracle. No one has scheduled anything. He runs right into all of this. This is what's going on. He's walking, and he decides to stop and get involved. Because what matters to these people matters to him. The miracle worker works miracles because of what matters to you. And let's look at what happens. Number one, your nose, Jesus cares about what you want. Read a little more of the story. When the Lord saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he walked over to the coffin and touched it, and the bearers stopped. "Young man," he said, "I tell you, get up." The Lord sees the whole thing, and as he sees this person, he can see everything that's changing for her. He can see everything that's approaching, and he can in your life too. He knows all the stuff that's coming. He knows what you're going to go through. He sees it all. He sees everything that's coming. He doesn't even know this woman, but he sees everything that is approaching her life, and it matters to him, so he stops. And if you're wondering, you know, would Jesus stop for me? Well, he stopped for her. He sees everything that's coming. And it says his heart goes out to her. When you think of God, do you think of God having a heart? Jesus said, if you see me, you see God. If you see God, he has a heart. His heart goes out. I saw somebody a few days ago get fired at my job. And 2 weeks before he was going to get married, they fired him and let him go. And I was standing with some other guys. We were just standing at his around where he was cleaning out his desk, and he got fired, and you could see him just fighting back the tears, and he's probably thinking all the different thoughts. How am I going to explain this? What am I going to do? And he just called him in. "You're fired. Go clean out your desk." And as I stood there, my heart went out to him. And honestly, it just did. I didn't stand there and think, well, gosh, you know, that's what he gets, because he's always later. Here's his consequences. I wasn't even thinking about why he got fired. because my heart went out to him. I think my son Capone said it best when he just said, God, poor guy. And you know when your heart goes out to somebody, you don't process it at a why level. Which is what they get when they, your heart goes out. You don't think, well, if that guy wouldn't party every night and got drunk, he would have got hit in that car, he wouldn't be at this darn funeral. And that's not how you process it. Your heart goes out. When's the last time your heart went out to someone? Or here's a question. Did your heart used to go out to someone, but now they've pissed you off and it doesn't go out to them anymore? Your heart used to go out to them. Your heart used to ache for them, but now they've done something. And now all you can think about is what they've done, and they did it again, and how could they do that to me? So now your heart doesn't go out to them at all anymore. All you do is think about what they did wrong. And here's all I want to ask, because it's your call. Your heart's like a garage, put into it whatever you want. Would you rather have your heart go out to someone, or would you rather process why they're in the situation that they're in? And Jesus just comes right up on it, and his heart goes out. Whose heart is going out to you? And can you see Jesus as someone that has a heart and even has emotions? Or is he Mr. Logic? He just doles out consequences. Everything has to be logical, logical, logical. Well, if it has to be logical, can you tell me why he made that monkey with a rainbow-colored butt? Have you seen, like, one of the animal shows? And I know, like, the zoologists say, well, it's because he has to blend into the trees and it's a survival thing, out of evolutional thing. Maybe, but, I mean, maybe it wasn't that at all. Maybe God just went, whoo-hoo. Cool butt, and just send him off into the jungle. I mean, you don't know. I mean, it's like, why give a monkey a rainbow butt? Well, because maybe God has that side of him where he stops at a funeral where he's not invited. I mean, who walks up into a funeral? He walks up into the funeral, and he must have, Jesus, he has authority wherever he goes. No matter where someone's at. And it's not because he's militant or he has some position or he's like packing or anything like that. He's got big guns like mine. I mean, it's not like that. I mean, he's like, it's somehow who he is, when he comes into a situation with people, there's an authority there, a person. He stops a funeral. Now, when you're the guys carrying the casket, it's a pretty clear job you're supposed to have. Get the casket over to the grave. You don't stop because a stranger walks up. But they do. Jesus has something, you know, it's way past the it factor. And he walks up into the funeral and everybody stops. And he walks over to the funeral bearers and they stop and he touches the casket and he speaks to the dead person. So you'll have to decide if you think there's an afterlife. Is there some people on the other side? But Jesus thinks there is and he starts talking to this person. And have you noticed he didn't do a needs assessment or a wants assessment? I don't know if you ever get caught in that when you want to talk to God about something in your life. You say, well, is this a need or a want? I mean, how do I justify a 4x truck as a need? Well, once in a while, every year, I have to maybe pull something. I mean, it's like you get all caught. Have you ever get caught up in life trying to figure out, is this a want or a need? And you can't ask God for a want. I mean, how do you ask God for a want? Because you don't actually need a want. And so you just get all your needs listed down. And then all of a sudden, God's a miser. He provides basic shelter, food, and air. And that's my God. I mean, think about it. I mean, because we get there in life. I mean, you do. I mean, you get enough of the stuff about watch your income and budget and make sure that it's not a need and it's a want. And here, like, hey, this widow does not need her son back. She'll continue to breathe. She wants her son back. So if you had difficulty, like, well, I can't ask for a miracle on my vacation because a miracle is a want. And I can't ask for a brand new car because a brand new car is a want. And I can't ask to meet somebody soon. Those are all wants. I can't ask God for those things because God doesn't care about you. Yes, he cares about what you want. He really does. Jesus doesn't even find out if she wants a miracle. And he doesn't ask anybody. This is how you think it would happen. This is how it would happen in religion. They would stop everything, and they would say, okay, who's in charge of the funeral? And then they'd bring them over, and they'd say, now listen, do you think she deserves a miracle? How has her church attendance been? Is she paying her tithe? Did she bring anything to the bake-off? I mean, we need to know, has she hit any of the markers here before we even consider a miracle? And Jesus doesn't do any of that stuff. He just rolls up, and as he walks up, everybody stops, and he starts talking to a dead guy, which might have made him think, well, he... Or there's some lines underneath where I want you to write something. I just want you to think about this for a second. I want you to think about this. What is it that you really want? And you've put it off because you feel like, no way, that's not religious enough. I can't ask God for that. That's just a want. And I'll play my cards out, so I'll do it too. I really want this 4x Jeep truck thing that I've been looking at for a long time. I just want that truck. I don't know if Jesus will ever give it to me. He may not. There is no way to justify it. It gets 14 miles to the gallon. There's no way to justify it. It is a huge polluter. There is no way to justify this in the world. There's not one. I've tried, so you can just trust me. There's no way other than I just want this, God. What is it you want? You got all tangled up. I just want you to know something. Whatever you want matters to Jesus. The miracle worker is motivated by what you want, not your goodness. Now flip it over. Let's look at one other thing in this story as we go along. So number two, Jesus cares about what you need. Imagine what everybody's thinking now here, Jesus talking to this dead person, and the dead boy sat up and began to talk. So that would like probably freak everybody out. And Jesus gave him back to his mother. And you're thinking as you're watching it, well, where else would he? I mean, of course he gave him back to his mother. What else would he do? I mean, like if the son comes back up, well, of course he's going to give him back to his mother. I mean, that's totally, completely normal. Why would the writer even put that in there unless he wasn't with his mother when he died? Maybe they were fighting. Maybe he'd run off. Maybe they were in some kind of a relationship thing and it was all messed up. And we all know what it's like, you know, when someone dies and we wish there was things we would have said. You know, someone dies and you're wishing you would have said some things, but you didn't get a chance to. And imagine this boy. I mean, he's dead and Jesus brings him back to life. And when you read these stories in the Bible, don't just think that the guy, this boy, is just like, oh, cool, man, I'm back. I mean, come on. He's probably going, where was I and how am I get here? What am I doing in this thing? And he's just probably like going, what the, and he doesn't know where he's been, how long, how come. And all of a sudden he's back and he starts talking right away. We don't know what he's saying. We don't even know who he's saying to it, but we know the moment that he's back, he starts talking and Jesus directs him to his mother. So I'm just going to go out on a limb. I mean, he's talking, talking, talking. Maybe she's like, ooh, she's right over here, boy. Because maybe he had just the opposite. What if he was a dead guy that after he was dead, he knew what it was like to be dead and have things that you wish you would have said? And maybe the moment he got back, he was like, this is my big chance. I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but I'm going to start talking to my mom right now because I wish I would have said this stuff before I died. What's my point? How are you doing with your mom? Mother's Day's coming and approaching. Do you have anything you need to say? How are you doing with your dad? Brothers and sisters, friends. Who is it you need to say something to? You haven't said it yet, but you need to say something. I don't want to get weirded out with you, but I guess if you come to church, you should get weirded out once. And so my mom died when I was 16 years old, and I had a long conversation with her when I was in my middle 30s. She didn't come back alive or anything like that. It wasn't like she came down, but I'd always wanted to say some things to her, and I never got the chance. When she died, I didn't want to talk to her. We didn't have a good relationship. I didn't want to say anything to her at all. But years and years later, as Jesus healed my heart, there was things I wanted to say to my mom. And it was frustrating to be in a situation where you had matured and grown, and you were different now, and you wanted to say something to somebody because you understood some things, and then you didn't get a chance to. And one time I was praying about it. I was just praying and praying, and this is a miracle, so this is a series on miracles. This is a miracle. Jesus said to me, your mom's listening. I knew my mom went to heaven. I had known that because I knew she got saved the week before she died. And your mom is listening. And I was like, you know, I don't know if you ever do this with the Lord. You're like, yeah, right. And then all of a sudden you realize you're talking. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to talk to you like talking to you like I talked to my wife. And your mom's listening. And And I was like, really, Lord? She's listening right now. It was awesome. I got to say so many things that I had longed to say. And when I got done, it was so complete. Somehow, it's a miracle. It just resonated in me. Whew. I finally got to say it, and she finally got to hear it. Who do you need to talk with? And I use the word need. Because sometimes we get all turned around. We think relationships are just wants. Well, I want to have a good relationship with my dad. Well, I want to get along with this guy at work. But it's not like my life is over if I don't. I want something better with my mom. I don't like how it is right now. But it isn't like I can't, you know, I can still go on. I mean, things are still okay. I mean, I'm still living. It's not like I have to have that relationship good. But what if it is? In this story, it's easy to focus on the widow. But what if the story is actually also about this boy? And what if he needed to talk to his mother? He needed it. Man, he came out of death like a man out of a cannon because he's like, this is my chance. Because in relationships, what if they're more of a need? What if they are like air? How do you know a need? I think you sort of make the distinction with desperation. When you can't breathe, you get desperate. When I was a kid, there was a big public swimming pool that we used to all go to, and you know, we'd all go down there and swim all day long, and I didn't have much money as a kid, so I never had any money to take with me to get chips or a soda or anything like that. So my big trick was I would swim down to the bottom of the pool, and kids were dumb. They'd wear their money in their bathing suit, and they'd swim around, and it would come out of their suit, and it would all come down to the bottom, and there'd be like a nickel or a dime and stuff. So I would swim down to the bottom and hold my breath, and I'd rub my hand everywhere, and I'd find enough money to maybe get a Coke or something like that. I'd do that all the time. But the best place to find money was there was a crack. This was an Olympic-sized swimming pool. There was a crack that ran right across the pool at like the 5.5-6 foot mark from one side to the other. There was a crack. And for some reason, whoever lost their money, and the little kids would play in the shallow area, they were the dumb ones that lost their money, and the money would somehow go, like, get drugged down towards the deeper end, I think because there was like a drain there, but it would get stuck in the crack. And I discovered that. I was like, I think I was the only kid that knew about it. It'd be like a gold mine right there waiting for me, you know? So I would swim underneath there, and I'd put my finger along the crack, and I would swim, hold my breath, and when it ran into a coin, I would grab it. And I'd run a little more, and I would grab it. This is all, I just looked like a guy swimming around, but actually, I was like, you know, earning money down. It was my first job. And I'm swimming down there one day, and as I go, and I'm finding some, and I put it in the other hand, and I'm finding some, and I put it in the other hand. As I go along, I feel something coming. It feels like money, and all of a sudden, my finger is stuck. I thought it was a coin, and so I tried to reach up underneath it and pluck it up out of there, and it jammed my finger into a little hole in the crack, and all of a sudden I was completely stuck. My finger was stuck in the crack. I'm a little kid. You can't hear a little kid when he screams underwater. You know, I'm just like, bah! And you realize no one can hear you. This is how you die. You know, and I'm trying to get the finger out, and it won't come out, and I'm just like, it's serious stuff, you know, and I can't breathe, and all of a sudden, and I come up out of there, you know, and you ever had one of those moments where your life totally sucks, and it's crazy, and everything's going on, and then you look up, and nobody even knows. Throw us the ball. I'm like, the ball, man, I was almost dead. You know, but that, two things in that. One, the desperation when you have no air. And the feeling when you can breathe again. I wonder if that's the boy in this story. Because when I came up out of that water, it sort of looks like this guy. I didn't come up out of that water and go, all right, awesome air. Man, I came out of that water like, wow, you know, and I was just like this guy. Because maybe he was desperate because of a relationship. Are you? And if you are, if it feels like, oh, I'm so desperate, the miracle, and it has nothing to do with your goodness, man, when you get that air. I have a really super close friend I went to college with, and I completely screwed up. I was supposed to be a big part of his son's wedding, and I just marked it on my calendar, and things got going, and I got double booked, and I ended up not being at the wedding. And I had a special chair that I was supposed to sit by his wife. He was a pastor, and so there was a chair I was going to bring her. It was just an absolute mess. And so when I called him up, I knew I had probably done something wrong. You know, I don't know if you minimize stuff that way, like you do something. It's like you totally, completely, like, wreck your car, and it's totaled, and you get out and go, whoa, fender bender. It's like, no, you know. It's like, and I called him up, and he was so angry at me. And he said to me, he said, that's it with you. This always happens with you and your schedule, and that's it. We're not friends anymore. You're not in my life anymore. And I hung up the phone. And I was like, just in a moment, you're just like, all I knew today, I just said a prayer. I said, Jesus, don't let it end this way. Please. And you know, in just like a minute, my phone rang again. It was him. He said, why do you have to be like this? But I still want to be friends. What relationship do you need? You need it like air. And here's the bottom line you can write in your notes. Jesus wants to help us. What matters to him is what you want. It might be a motorcycle. It might be an RV. It might be a cabin at the lake. It might be I can keep my diet this time. It might be I want to get laser on my eyes. Whatever. If you want it, he cares about it. But what do you need? And put it in the context of a relationship. It's not playing. You need, don't fool yourself and think that a relationship is a want. I can get by. It doesn't matter if I don't get along with my dad. Don't. You need it like you need air. And Jesus wants to help. And here's the end of the story right here. They were all filled with awe and praised God. A great prophet has appeared among us, they said. God has come down to help his people. Circle that. God has come down not to judge his people, not to reprimand his people, not to punish his people, not to belittle his people, not to get them to join his religion. God has come down to help his people. The news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding country, and that's why. People saw Jesus and they said, you're never going to believe it. He didn't even scold us or get mad at us or anything. He wasn't even scheduled to be in our town. But he did a miracle because what mattered to us mattered to him. What do you want to see happen in your life? You really want it? What do you need to see happen? You really need it? Is it going to take a miracle to happen? And Jesus wants to help.